Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Vassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode. Today, I'm glad to be with Makian Magdek, and he is a product director at Deel, but has an interesting background working in some cool companies like Vimeo. So we will explore some of your history. Makian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe to start with a bit more words about yourself, can you tell us a bit more about you, who you are, where you come from, and what you have been doing lately?
Sure thing. I come from Ukraine. It's where I was born. I live most of my life in there. And I spent 4 years living in New York. And now I'm in Barcelona. But professionally, I started out as a software engineer. I did that for 3 years and realized I'm not going to be good at it. So then I moved on to find myself somewhere else. I did sales, I did marketing, and I had some success with it. But then I found product management, which was kind of a mix of everything. Like being great product management is being good at everything, like not in one thing. So I think that resonated with me. And then I co-founded my own startup, had some success with it on Kickstarter. It was hardware, which I never want to do again. It's just too hard. And and then I made a leap and moved to New York and joined Vimeo. And that's where I had, I would say, biggest growth as a PM. I was in a very good place at a very good time professionally. It was the middle of COVID, and coincidentally, it was a huge demand spike for all the video products. So I was in the middle of hyper growth. And then 6 months ago, I think, I moved to Barcelona and joined Deel, which is a very different industry, but also very high fast growing space. For those who don't know, Deel helps with hiring people globally in any country, and it's the fastest growing startup in the world.
Nice, didn't know that. That's a
good kicker. Like, for the story. Not a lot of people know that, but it's fascinating. Yeah.
Okay, amazing. Okay, so as we discussed previously, for the uncovering strategy stories, it would be interesting to know more about this hyper growth at Vimeo. I think that there may be some cool things to discuss there. The way I usually frame my first question is if you can relate or tell us a story in which you had to create a strategy in this context, and maybe give us a bit of the background on how it started, if you were changing maybe an existing strategy, or if you had to formulate something for a new group or a new product that you were launching, something like that. So give us a bit of the context when you started this new strategy process.
Yeah, Vimeo is a great case to talk about this. I was deeply involved in two different strategies, one that I think worked very well, and the other that I think worked, but not as well as we wanted it to. And maybe we'll have time to talk about both. So the time was, it was January 2020, when I was asked at Vimeo to step in as a PM for enterprise product. At the time, Vimeo was primarily a B2C product, B2C SaaS, and we were starting to step into enterprise. And Vimeo also, importantly, at the time, it was like, I think, 2 or 3 years since Vimeo made a big pivot from being like a hipster YouTube and focusing on actually finding its ground on many areas, and focusing on video creators, first of all. Around, I think, 2017 or 2018, a new CEO, Anjali at Vimeo, she pivoted strategy of overall Vimeo to more towards businesses. Mm-hmm. But when I stepped in, we were still very focused on small businesses, and I was asked to PM our enterprise offering. It was like we launched that offering, I think, about 3 months before I was assigned to that role. And my job was just to make it work. And that's where strategy got very, very interesting because one of the things I learned fairly soon is that we're not set up to go after enterprise businesses. Because we have like we don't have the right resource allocation to prioritize between the small businesses and enterprise. Like our org structure and priorities were not set up to go after enterprise. So it was my job to figure that out and communicate that and to come up with strategy to, I wouldn't say I was the only one to come up with strategy. It was a group of people where I was a vocal voice, but was to figure out like how can we win an enterprise? And it was in building that strategy and communicating it, I was able to persuade leadership along with a few other folks that we should move up market towards enterprise and not only focus on SMBs. And why we should do that and how we're going to do that. And so I can jump at the end and I can talk about what that strategy was, and then you can double click at any point you want. So the idea was we go after big enterprises. We go through the bottoms up motion. We already have a huge base, like a typical PQ product led growth case. We already have a lot of users inside those large companies. We ran the data. I don't remember the numbers. I don't know if I can give them, but a lot of Vimeo users were already users who work in these larger corporations, and we had organic growth inside those organizations. So, like one of our acquisition strategies was bottoms up. We acquire users, we acquire the end users, and then we go up the chain and we sell either to IT or to head of marketing or to head of HR, et cetera. So that was one part of the strategy. The other was that we have a very solid differentiator against everyone else in the video market, in that, and I called it that basically. For most, how did I say that? With our competitors, the users use their product because they have to. While with Vimeo, they use it because they want to. Like
Interesting.
enterprise video market was mostly like at the time, and I still think now, a lot of the software is made for buyers, not for users. You know, classic enterprise case.
Microsoft
Yeah. I mean,
Sorry.
still Microsoft Teams kind of is winning. But in our case, it was a fairly easy market to disrupt because it was fascinating. One of the biggest, like Fortune, I don't know, 50 clients, Fortune 50, companies, were using Vimeo as like individually without an enterprise plan. And they made a presentation for us how they want to use Vimeo inside their organization. They were selling Vimeo to us. No, it's like the other way around. So like the pool
Lovely.
was very strong. They really wanted to use it on an enterprise level, and they were begging us like for these and those features so
Let me
that
have a
we could
question for that.
enable
So,
it.
what do you attribute that to? I mean, you mentioned this is a differentiation, and I can relate to that, but why were those users wanting to use Vimeo and they were kind of forced to use the other one? So, is this similar to the Microsoft Teams example, or is there something different that you believe this was case?
It was love of brand that was built on years of a
Okay.
good product that solved a very specific problem. Vimeo is and was very good for a long period of time in allowing to playback video online, embedded on their websites. It's a very good player, an embedded player. It's the best in the industry, I would say. And there was a lot of use on it. They were using it for internal. Like walkthrough videos for town halls, sometimes for recorded town halls, for marketing videos. There was a lot of that. HR onboarding, like video is a very handy format, and just they were using that in many many like they were using it internally heavily. And there was a lot of people who fell in love with Vimeo, first with the product, then with the brand. And at that point, it becomes a very strong unfair advantage. You have a brand that your target audience loves, and they want to use it, and they love both the brand and the product.
Yeah, got it. Okay, then. So should I start double clicking on the topics?
Yeah. I didn't finish. There was a couple other parts of the strategy that I like.
Go so for it, go for
a
it.
Couple pillars. Yeah. The second one was the unfair advantage was the brand that we have already. The third one was the land and expand strategy, basically. We started with a one use case in enterprise organization, and then we saw a reasonable and a good path to expand to other use cases and eventually be a one-stop shop for all the departments in the organization. And obviously, it's also a very typical strategy, I would say. Instead of buying multiple products, you buy one, it goes with all the pros and cons with that. That's a very interesting one that we can talk more about, because I think while it's a strong benefit for the buyer, it's actually a disadvantage for the user in most cases, which is a very interesting paradox. I think that that's probably enough. Like having the, I think this is these three pillars. It's a very strong, very solid strategy. I think it worked. Obviously, I think there are public numbers now that Vimeo report, because Vimeo is now a public company, and you can imagine it was launched around the time when I was assigned a PM, and by now. I also don't quote me on that. I don't remember. I think the public information is it makes like around 30, maybe 40% of Vimeo's revenue these days. So obviously, okay. it worked very well.
Yeah. So you're talking about for the enterprise segment, you're talking this 30, 40% or whatever it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. One of the, so the first question I have around the story is you mentioned that the decision was already, so I have to, two-part question. First one is, the decision was already, so the offering was already there and you had to figure out how it works. So it's not like, hey, we want to expand, so we kind of figure it out and then we launch it. It was maybe the other way around, if I got that correctly. So you have an existing product that was, quote unquote, not working and you need to jump in to make it work?
You're referring to the presentation I called out. There was a product that was ready for individual use, but it wasn't ready for enterprise use. If that makes sense.
Okay.
Our clients, our buyers went with enterprise, and they were asking for all of these typical enterprise features like SSO and like groups and all that. So we had a great product for individual use case, embedded video player, and they were asking for an enterprise case. And I can talk more about which one specifically. But yeah, there was a pull. There was definitely a pull as we talked to enterprise clients.
Okay. So the intention was to create this offering and make it work. Then that I got.
Yeah, enterprise was definitely a different offering. It was it was a product on its own.
Yeah, got it. And then maybe the other part that you mentioned is that this is January 2020, so very, say, early COVID. So maybe the big hit of the wave of using video products came afterwards. So how did this develop over time? Did you have to, and this is unrelated to the strategy process itself, but did you have to change and adapt quickly to how things were moving in March, April 2020, or was this part of the process?
Yeah, it's funny. I just had to work a lot more because we were all very excited about this. And actually, so the demand for this is specifically also accelerated quite a lot, because you can imagine a lot of enterprise organizations, if they were doing town halls before in the office, now they needed to do them virtually and they needed a solution for that. So that was part of our offering, and that accelerated. If they were doing webinars before, or if they were doing in-person networking events, they needed to pivot to webinars and run something like that. So that accelerated. The demand hit us very fast, and we needed to accelerate this plan. But then also because of my ambition, we, on top of this one, we launched another brand new product from scratch that we were just like too passionate to skip. It was a very good time for. And also at the time, I was still a product manager for our live streaming product, which also got a huge spike in demand. So it was acceleration, but COVID accelerated all of that. And I was PMing like three very different products with hyper growth stage, which was the time of my life.
Then we can talk about time management in another episode. But let's go back to strategy. And the first question you usually ask is, okay, you probably need to, you mentioned the end of story, so these three pillars, but how it started? How do you collect what are the right, or what are the possible bets that we can make to make this enterprise growth work?
This is simple. It starts as any other product. It starts with users and understanding their needs. So the first thing I did was jump. I mean, I was thankful at the time we already had a small sales, well, not small. We had some sales organization, and small part of it was selling this product, trying to sell it. So we had some pipeline, we had some leads, and I just jumped on all of those calls with our salespeople. I listened to the recordings, and I don't know, I maybe did like 30 of them or so. And in some it was just listening, some it was being able to ask some follow-up questions, and that created my impression of like where does the need start with. There was a clear need at that time of what landed in the product we called Video Library. So basically, and that goes in like in the very center of this strategy of going after enterprise. You can imagine enterprise organization where like many different people use video for their own needs. Some have their classes, some webinars, some training, some product walkthroughs. Then there's IT who needs to be able to manage this. If people leave, they should not have access to those videos anymore. Then they want to exchange, you know, who watched what for how long, because the HR needs to know how engaged the audience are. It's a typical case of things like Google Drive or Dropbox or actually the fun thing we learned is there that was actually in terms of demand, there was a mix of we need Google Drive and we need Netflix. We need corporate Netflix and Google Drive, and that's where I felt the pull, and that's the direction we were going, and that was a foundation for the overall enterprise strategy because the organization would have one central video library where all the content is stored and managed, and then anyone in the organization can find it and go watch like corporate Netflix at any time, what are the updates, and manage permissions and history and all that. So that was a product that we needed to build that was foundational. So that was the start of it. Then from that, I also detected a number of other use cases, but that was the start of it.
Yeah, okay. But maybe to summarize that, because you mentioned previously that there were kind of multiple people collaborating. So maybe just to form the picture of how all these insights were being collected before we are talking about the end of the story. So you end up building this product. But when you were going through the process, did you have, you know, any tool that you put these insights on or a way to collaborate, a whiteboard tool or something like that to collaborate with others in terms of collecting the potential things that you need to make enterprise work?
Nothing too glorious, too glamorous. Google Sheets, Google Docs, just to take notes. What was I would say that the most advanced part of it was the ability to listen to the calls. We had at the time system where I could barge in on the calls and listen to salesperson talking to the client without them knowing that I'm there. But now I would say all of it is handled by Gong, which I cannot give enough praise. So Gong, a tool that records all the sales calls in one place and transcribes them. I use that heavily. In B2B, it's a killer tool. Gong, I would say is the best part that I went back to it many times.
Got it. Got it. So then we have this these notes, and we are kind of forming our selection or our deciding on this, say, the central library, I will call it that way. Who do you need to collaborate with to make that decision happen. So I assume that, for example, sales will have, in this case, B2B enterprise, will have a big influence. Maybe there are kind of, I guess, at the CEO, if they are kind of betting on this enterprise segment, they will have an interest as well. So how do you distill this strategy in this selection phase in which you're saying, hey, yes, we need to concentrate on this one versus other topics, and maybe what the trade-offs are on different options?
Yeah, that was a fun part and a very difficult part because I was tasked with figuring out enterprise, but I wasn't given the right resources. And that was maybe one of the things that I'm most proud of is I think for a couple of months, I was trying to do it with a team. I had a dedicated team who were still doing live streaming, and the mandate was that they should start going into any other place in a company and be able to contribute to any other code base. In practice, that didn't work. They just told me, like, we can't, like, it takes too much time to understand. We break things, and then other teams get pissed off. Like, we can't do this. And so the next stage was for me to start influencing other teams and say, like, hey, we should do this and that, and like, because of these numbers and all that. That also didn't work because other teams had other priorities, the SMB market, as I mentioned in the beginning. And that was my moment of beating my head against the wall, trying to make this work, like having a very strong conviction, like, this is what we need to do. This is a tremendous potential. This is going to work, but we don't have the resources. We're not set up to do it. So I went above and beyond to communicate to, well, first other teams, but then my manager, and then their manager, and then the CEO in the end to explain that we cannot win in enterprise unless we shift our resources and change our strategy and dedicate more teams to this. And that was a big debate. A lot of people were involved, and yes, head of sales was a huge advocate. There was a number of people who I partnered up with, and I could say, like, in terms of influencing, that's the biggest thing that helped me is like having other champions and forming like this a group of people who push strongly on key decision makers to persuade. And then we changed the roadmap of almost 10 teams out of, I think at the time it was like 20 maybe teams at Vimeo role. And in order to do this, we needed to change that much. And people were pissed off at me, other PMs, saying like, hey, you're screwing up our roadmap. What are you doing? But it was, I think it was the right move. And this is also a good example when like, bottoms up cannot work. You have to go tops down sometimes because if like these big things you cannot do with just like every team being empowered on their own. Big shifts, you have to have a tops down decision and a change of course and change of strategy where you say, okay, everybody, we're doing things like we're going in a different direction. We need to change things up, and now we're going to do this. And then still within that bigger picture, we had specific areas where we empower teams like, okay, you're going to do search, you're going to do content management, you're going to do permissions, you're going to do private videos. And then there was like, there was still empowerment, but we had to do this big shift first.
Yeah, got it. I have too many questions, but I will start with the very first one. You mentioned having this, so you were influencing by showing the potential of this kind of new market, new possibilities. How do you actually come up with that? Because I assume that yes, you have some insights from these calls that you were mentioning, kind of the source of the key insights of what you need to do. But how do you convey the size of the opportunity, if you may, or yeah, how do you frame that, and how do you collect that information?
So first of all, I had some data. I quoted clients, and I think that's, by the way, that's where I learned from Vimeo leaders, like the storytelling, mixing the quantitative and qualitative data to tell the story. So I had the data, like this many clients needed this feature, and we lost this many deals because we didn't have this functionality. Very plain and simple storytelling. These are the links. These are a couple of client names. Then I go into qualitative, like client XYZ had people in these roles who were doing these types of videos, and they needed this functionality in order to unlock blah, blah, blah. Just give more color and more depth. So that's
Yeah.
that storytelling. That helped. I didn't need to take it further because I, that was that. I mean, I also need what I did communicate is like, we cannot possibly do this without these other teams because there's like, we need to go deep into these areas and those teams are knowledge holders. No one else can do this. That was the other point I needed to make. But I didn't need to show like the total addressable market. Oh, to be fair, at a slightly later point, my product marketing partner did that. But I have some level of skepticism towards TAMs because they're easy to manipulate. And I was lucky that Vimeo leadership had enough like foresight and just like gut feeling to understand, yeah, like this is a huge market. We have some great strong signals and we can win there. We have a really good differentiator and competitive advantage and the right to win, as we call it. So it was enough for me to show that we are not able to make progress on this and that there's no other way than to change direction of a number of other teams. I just have to follow up with one more thing. Remember, I was assigned to lead enterprise. There was already some buy-in that this is worth doing. Yeah. We already launched the product and it was sales team. So there was already some buy-in. I think the main persuasion that needed to happen is the amount of resources we need to make it happen. Well, the other product that I mentioned before that wasn't as big of a success, there I needed to build it from scratch and there I needed much more data to persuade because that was just like blank slate. No one wanted to do this. And then I started finding partners and anyway, that's another story, but it depends on the case. It depends on how much buy-in the leaders already have and how much you need to persuade them.
Yeah, got it. And maybe a follow-up question maybe related to this is, how long did it take? That's the real question. But I assume that, as you said, you started by trying to build it on your own with your small team, then trying to influence by yourself and kind of scaling. So I would say from getting the insights to really finding this way to influence the 10 roadmaps, how long did it take? Just for others to form a picture.
Yeah, I would say it took me about a month to figure out what we should do. Then it took me in parallel another 2 or 3 months to try and do it with my team and fail at it and collect more solid data points to bubble them up to show like to be able to persuade and to try it convincing other teams. I think it was about 3 months of try and make it happen, convince other teams and collect the data to do it. And then after basically those 4 months together, we pivoted.
Okay, got it. That sounds fast, but just to give others expectations. Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, this requires time. And you were in a, as you say, in a positive situation because there was already some buy-in. But if you're trying to influence without that buy-in, it will take even longer. So it's an excess impatience, maybe convincing about strategies sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, I was very impatient. Yeah.
All right, and I have a question around the collaboration with engineering. But what I'm asking is because at the end of the day, I assume that this, or I'm not sure if all these new features that you were trying to build to fulfill enterprises, let's say for example, single sign-on, but just to use an example, that was not at the core of your strategy, but those things typically require some architectural changes. And how much did you collaborate with an engineer manager or something like that to create these foundations for the strategy? Or was it much of a later thought once you have influenced the roadmaps?
Good question. I collaborated a lot in the beginning when we tried to do it with one team, and that didn't work. It's interesting. I had a partner who was half, who just moved from VP of engineering to VP of product. So we collaborated with her quite a lot. And it was both like product collaboration and engineering collaboration. And she mostly took care of all some of the big engineering decisions and involved a number of other folks. I wasn't heavy on engineering for that one. On the other one that I mentioned, it was more collaboration with engineering. But here we really built, we didn't have huge architectural changes, I would say. Like for SSO, it was, I don't think it was a huge architectural change. It was It was a feature that we built on top. But maybe we should have actually had more architectural changes. Like we were catching up with some of them over the time. But at the time, it felt no, it felt fairly clear. What we need to do it was the architecture felt reasonably understood and not a big revamp, but addition to what we had. Well, the one thing was like the permissions was a nightmare that we needed to re-architect, and that one took a lot of effort. And I think your question is fair. I think at the time maybe I was underinvested in engineering. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, great, great. That's at least it worked out. So good that you have this
Yeah.
dual role there, this dual person there. All right, then. Yeah, the final one I think you already mentioned, but I was just for clarification purposes I will ask it anyway. You mentioned that after the shift, so there was this top-down mandate, but at the end of the day, I assume that when you say influencing these 10 roadmaps, you have all these elements coming from your own discovery or listening to calls and things like that. How you transfer this knowledge to the PMs who will actually be working on these 10 roadmaps that needed to do some things around enterprise. So I assume that, so we want them to be, as you said, empowered enough to make their own decisions and to have all the context and whatnot, but also we don't, probably for speed purposes, we don't want to go do all the discovery again. So how do you handle this transition and going more for execution?
It's a good question. I think at a time I didn't I leaned more on action. I think I could have done a better job there because I had it all in my head, like what we need to do, and it was so obvious to me, and I was so impatient just to get it done. And I was like, yeah, there's this and that. Obviously, I shared the calls, I shared my notes, and then some of the teams picked it up well, and then they made it their own. And some of the other initiatives they died down because they like it wasn't gaining a good momentum. But I think to do it, I don't even know how do you balance it right, because we had a lot to figure out, and we needed to do it fast. I did a reasonable amount of like a handshake, like a knowledge transfer, and moved on and picked up some of the other items. And I should say, like some of the teams, it was an easier move than for others, because for some it was like basically the same thing that they were doing, but building on top of that in a different direction. Well, for example, like per teams and permissions, the team has been doing that, but now we just need kind of different functionality. Well, for other teams, it was building something for scratch. That was a bit harder. I don't know, but you're right, and I want to emphasize that basically, while leadership said, "Yeah, let's do it," like all the eyes went towards me to say, "Like, hey, like, what do we do here? It's like you made this shit. It's like, let's like
Fix
tell us
it.
what you had in mind there." I mean, I think I did a fair job explaining the overall idea and why all this happened and giving the broader picture, but then passing to the teams to figure out in more detail what exactly we do there. And yeah, it worked well in some cases. I think the key was, yeah, actually, the key was to get teams connected to clients and get them to care about their problems. I think that was the most important. That the right PMs and designers, and in some cases engineering leads, they relate to their new clients that they are focusing on. They talk to them, and they make the problem their own. Yeah, that was the key probably to it. I think the teams that worked, that happened. They made it their own.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, then moving a bit forward. So I'm trying to conclude the chapter of okay, where you influence it, management, you kind of get this buy-in, do the roadmaps influencing and whatnot. Did you have any sort of success criteria other than so I can imagine that growing enterprise is quite easy to say, or even revenues or clients or whatever. But did you have any other success criteria, like I don't know, usage of the library or things like that in your strategy, or was more like this high level goal that you were aiming for?
Good question. Because I cannot remember for sure, I think that probably that was not the primary thing.
Okay.
The numbers I threw around was the business we lost because of this, in terms of millions of dollars that we could have had if we had these features. Those were the numbers I shared around. I don't think I had like a goal that we will hit X amount of revenue by that amount of time. And I think if I would have done that now, I would probably be a bit more focused to try to translate all of that into those numbers. But I was lucky to have a very good partners and the managers to just get the idea I'm saying and just complement the rest out of that. Because yeah, we were focused on just get this out. This feels like right. We want to get this out, and then sales will follow. Revenue will follow.
No, my question was around maybe just after it's out, the lagging versus leading indicators. So I assume
Oh,
that
the
in this,
adoption, you mean like metrics?
exactly. But yeah,
Yeah, that was a
essentially.
very interesting one. It was a very hard to get. Yeah, I definitely had that. And maybe not at launch, like a couple months after launch, I started doing, well, actually, no, I did have that early, as we were doing this. I looked at things like active organizations, active teams, active team members, like what organizations have a critical number of active users weekly, and the difference between consuming the content versus creating the content or collaborating with the content. Those were like number of leading indicators that we were looking at, because in the end, what we wanted is engaged. We wanted. It's actually that's very interesting. I didn't mention this part of strategy, and it makes a four pillar very interesting. We had a starting point. A successful starting point was few creators and lots of viewers. That's like it's a healthy organization. They watch content, they consume it, ideally on a daily basis or at least on a weekly basis, and number of people keep creating it. That's a healthy organization from a video perspective. But what we wanted to do is create more value and become more sticky is to convert the viewers into creators, which would make organization much more sticky. It's a whole other thing I could talk about, but we already been behind our time, I think.
That's nice. I think I see what you're. So essentially, what you're mentioning is that in order to. So there was a strategic element there because, of course, we can talk about metrics and metrics will probably lead to tactics and things that we want to experiment and try. But if I can recap this correctly, you're mentioning that there was a strategic element into growing inside these companies by turning more people into creators. So I think that's a. That's fair. Okay, got it. I guess that my final question then, I think is going into this place as well, is how often do you review the strategy? So we mentioned about this initial 4 months, they were a bit chaotic and all over the place, but once you have this in place and this structure going, how often do you review? How that review look like?
At Vimeo, we did it once every 6 months. I really liked the process. It was led by our CPO, who then became a president. So we had a very good cross-team collaboration. There was teams from finance, from marketing, from sales, from product, and engineering. Everybody had a bit of their homework to prepare and present like the latest trends, what's working, what's not. And then we would stay in a room for a day or generally like share all that information, exchange, debate, discuss, and then debate should we pivot, should we go after something new, or is it working, what we're working on, is it working? And plus, but so is it working? Plus, should we go after something else because the market was booming? And like, are we missing some opportunities here that we should pursue? Can we do all of that at the same time? Do we have enough resources, et cetera? So once every 6 months, quite structured, very intense, and very thought-provoking, and very productive.
Okay, got it. And maybe an afterthought on this and how the strategy developed. Once the I won't say the new structure because it was not the structure, but you putting enterprise on the roadmap of 10 teams for the following periods or following strategies updates, do this team have enterprise as part of their work? So they were presenting about enterprise, or you or someone remained as the, you know, enterprise lead, just to put a name to it, reporting everything about enterprise. So how did you balance the kind of teams getting their, yeah, their share of SMB versus enterprise versus having someone focus solely on that one?
Yeah, that's interesting. While we were building, it was like a mixed unofficial structure that just worked. It was me influencing and looking like, it's not just metrics, because when you're building from scratch, it's like you don't look at metrics as much. It was me and then my partner, as I mentioned, the VP of product. And a lot of those teams who were impacted reported to her, and she was on board, which was very important. And so we were like, this was shaping up well. And it was like, we were just like, we didn't focus as much on like, who cares about what, we were just building and that worked and we just didn't disrupt that. But then once we started to get to a stage when we were launching this, a very painful thing to me happened. I had to let go and step away from that. I was asked by my manager. I was annoyed at the time, but it was the right decision. I had to step away and give those teams room to properly own this and look after this. And I went back to like live streaming and most of this video library. It was owned by my partner, who was VP product, and her teams. And then she set all the right, there was the right ownership, all the right metrics, all the right goals, OKRs, and all that. And I had to step away.
Interesting. Okay, so it became more ingrained in the normal structure. That doesn't make sense. Okay, then closing the chapter, I have two unrelated questions. I will start with the first one that I was intending to focus a bit more on differentiating in a very crowded space on video streaming, but you solved that very early in the episode. But I have one question remaining towards that. You mentioned that kind of building this audience of people who love the product, given the nice embed player experience. What feels awkward in a sense is that I assume that this is more like, I mean, if, I will not diminish the importance of the of having the right technology and the product experience, but I assume that it's not such a defendable advantage, meaning that others may be able to catch up or replicate that. So how do you feel about this being sustainable in the long term? Actually, well, maybe going back to the same, it was sustained for a long time, but with also these many players out there and people kind of investing and innovating in the space, how do you feel about this differentiation kind of being true for a longer time?
You mean differentiator being a good product, good user experience and all that?
Yeah. I'm that's what I captured from what you mentioned at the beginning, on saying, yeah, hey, people were coming to the front.
It's interesting. Good product, yes, easier to build, to replicate. Brand love, very hard to replicate. And brand love comes from a much longer period of time and commitment and more actions. So that's one area where very hard, like if you have a great product competing with great product with great brands, like the great product without a brand, it's going to have a very hard time to win. Then also, it's already like word of mouth and reputation. For example, when one of the strategies in terms of acquisition that I had is just having known keywords in Google search. And then there's a bunch of no-name companies who clients don't know. And then there's Vimeo. You know it at least. And like, even though maybe you don't know a lot about it, you've heard about it. It's like it's somewhat known name. And then you click on the one that you know. Like you're searching for something. You see a bunch of companies that you have no idea who they are. And then you see one that you might have heard about. That's an advantage. So again, it's a brand awareness. I would say it's a slightly other aspect. And just having many, many users already. Plus, all that gives us also economy of scale, because now we can beat on prices. And because we have a multi-product portfolio, we can also allow ourselves to have lower prices and not make a lot of money on this product at a time. So there was like a number of competitive levers. But I would say just go more from the time, my time at Deel, something more fresh. I think a very under-discussed and undervalued competitive advantage is execution. And I think for Deal, it's exactly that. It's just fast execution beats so many other strategic things that levers that you would think. And I see it firsthand working very well at Deal, and it's fascinating.
That's interesting. I will invite you for another episode in, I don't know, 6 months to discuss it. Okay, and the second question was maybe to get the 2 minute version of the other strategy story you mentioned that didn't work so well. So I assume this is the very successful one for the numbers you shared. But can you give us a few hints on the other one that failed and maybe why you think that was the case?
The very short story is that it's the time when I competed against Loom.
Nice.
Obviously, I think by now you can see that a lot of people know about Loom, and not as many people know about the product I built, although I think it's a great product. It's called Vimeo Record. It's video recorder. I think it's everybody knows the use case. It was a very, very good strategic fit for Vimeo at a time. And it's reinforced the strategy that I just discussed about the video library and enterprise space. And it actually was the tool that's best suited to turn viewers into creators. I think what worked very well for Vimeo is how strong of a strategic fit it was for Vimeo at the time. Plus, just the core foundation, the product by itself is an extremely valuable thing. Asynchronous video, it's a very good use case for the end user, but it's also great for bottoms-up growth, for expansion, and for turning viewers into creators. My biggest learning why we didn't win, I would say we didn't win. We had success, it worked well, it's a very beloved product at Vimeo and a very fast growing, but it's not as fast growing as Loom. And I think the reason for that is beyond product. It's exactly more to the brand and more to the perception. At least that's my theory, because I've spent so much time with this. But I think what happened is Loom is a, or at least at the time, was a single product company. Video recordings are associated with Loom associated with recordings. It's much easier to spread word with it. It's much easier to talk about it, to explain what it is, even in their language they use, you want to send a Loom. While at Vimeo, we have said, you want to send a recording. It's these small differences make a lot of make a big difference. Vimeo was billed and perceived and known as a hosting company. And it's very hard to change that perception from this company does video hosting and player to this company now does video recording. Although technologically, it was a fairly small lift for us. It was a very small difference. We reuse a lot of Vimeo's technology stack to make it happen. But it starts there, perception. It's very hard to change and build that momentum and that flywheel because we had viral loops, we had all that, but they weren't as performing because you like you recommend you start recording and then you recommend Vimeo as a whole, and Vimeo is about many more things than this one thing. And this is where I think the fun is between startups and large organizations, and why it's always possible to disrupt a large organization because you can always go much more narrow and solve a very, very specific problem. That was that. And then on top, there was also part of strategy is when someone like Loom is focused on a very specific product, all the resources go there. While at Vimeo, it was one of 20 or 30 product teams. And sometimes we wanted to build the best amazing feature for this users, but it required a couple of other teams. And we couldn't do it because they were busy with other priorities. So we were losing for this specific use case and for this team. And that's the trade-offs of multi-product versus single product.
What's very interesting about the story is that not the same, but very similar thing that you mentioned before as being your strength. So the brand awareness for video streaming or video hosting is what may impact you negatively in this new space because maybe Loom have that advantage in this space. So it's quite interesting reflection.
Yeah, exactly. You need to leverage your strengths, right, and know where you can win.
Okay, now we are running out of time, and I don't want to miss my very last typical ending question, which is what some learning you had about strategy over your years of experience that we didn't cover in this conversation.
I would say I would just highlight something that we leaned over is relevant for a lot of PMs is when you know that strategy isn't working, or there's no strategy, or there's just not a miss, not companies not aligned on one strategy. And it's like a typical situation when you're given some goals as a team that you're trying to pursue, but then you're beating your head against the wall because you need other teams to collaborate with you, and they don't because they have other priorities. That can easily be the result of strategy misalignment. That basically they were given other priorities. It's not going well together, and that's why you're not set up for success. And like I would say, it's important to be aware of that, to know when to escalate to your manager or their manager that I cannot really do this because we're not like we have a strategy problem. We need to realign.
That's lovely. Alignment is a big topic. You can have the best strategy, but it needs to be aligned with the different teams.
Yeah.
All right. Again, this has been great. Where can people find you? How can the audience that receive all this value from you help you in any way?
My LinkedIn, I'm active on LinkedIn. Reach out with comments, questions. I'm just happy to help. That's it.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, thanks so much. This has been lovely, and then you share a lot of interesting stories and insights. So yeah, thanks again for your time
Oh,
today.
I would say for
Go for it.
audience, a great thing. I love to learn how other companies work as well. So especially if you're in Barcelona, where I'm at, going for coffee, just learning, telling about how your company works. I love doing that. I try to do that all the time. Or if you're around or passing by, just hit me a note. I'd love in-person meetings and coffees, talking about the insights of every company. That's one thing.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thanks so much for everything.
Thank you, Nacho. It's a great conversation.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.